Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This is the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. Before we begin, this program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sara, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Seb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. And you know, we're the only organization outside of Israel that is supporting the heroic Hilltop Youth in their quest to save Judea and Samaria, the biblical heartland of Israel, from the creation of a so-called Palestinian state. There are no Palestinians, there is no Palestine, but they want to create an Arab terrorist state in Israel's biblical heartland, which would be national suicide for Israel. And so people ask us, how can we help the Hilltop Youth, who are the only people that are working to stop this, the only people who are actively fighting to stop this? You know, they destroyed another Hilltop this past week. Another Hilltop community, with this particular one had two families living there and some yeshiva students studying as well. And they came and destroyed it. And the interesting thing is, though, that this was widely publicized in over 20 news media and internet outlets. Something which 6 months ago would never have happened before JTF got involved. Before JTF got involved, these things would happen and nobody would even know about it. They would destroy homes and destroy communities and throw Jews out of their, off of their land, so that the Arab enemies of Israel could come and take over. And no one even knew about it, because the Hilltop Youth didn't have the time to publicize it. They didn't have the time or the means to publicize it, because they were all working just to have enough food to feed their families and to get basic necessities for their families. Now, because JTF is supporting them, they have time now to publicize when these terrible injustices are done, when Jewish homes are destroyed and Jewish men, women, and children are thrown out of their homes just because they want to live in the land of Israel, and they're arrested and beaten and attacked by Israeli border guards and police with the cooperation of the Israeli army, solely because they want to live in their own land. And the Israeli government and the Israeli authorities want to give this land to Israel's Arab Nazi enemies to create a so-called Palestine state. But now, when they do these things, at least it's being widely publicized and there's resistance and people protest, and members of the Knesset protest, and leading rabbis are protesting. These are things that 6 months ago were not happening. This is a tremendous difference in the situation from just half a year ago. Now, it's not enough, because they're trying to destroy these communities, and because we have to expand these communities if we're going to stop the Arabs who are building massively, illegal building massively all over Judea and Samaria. If we don't stop them, there's going to be a Palestinian state in everything but name, and it'll be inevitable and unavoidable, God forbid. So we've got to support them, and that's what JTF is there for. So people ask us often what they can do to support. We need a Ben Hecht. You know who Ben Hecht was? Ben Hecht was the famous Hollywood producer and playwright who created movies like Gone with the Wind. A genius. And he found out what was happening to the Jews during the Holocaust. And he got involved with Peter Berkson and with right-wing Jewish activists who were trying to save the Jews during the Holocaust. He got involved with them. And in the end, they did save hundreds of thousands of Jews from the German Nazi murder machine. Hundreds of thousands of Jews would have been murdered, together with the over 6 million who were eventually murdered. Hashem Yikom Damo. May God avenge their blood. Those Jews were saved by things like the Raoul Wallenberg mission and other things that were funded by Ben Hecht and his organization. But they couldn't save over 6 million Jews. They were able to save a certain number, but they couldn't save over 6 million Jews, the vast majority. So we're in a situation now where we need a Ben Hecht, because after the Holocaust, after World War II was over, and after the Holocaust, Ben Hecht continued his fundraising activities, this time on behalf of Etzel. Etzel is the acronym for Irgun Tzvai Leumi, the Jewish military organization that was run by, again, by right-wing Jew, underground Jewish organization fighting to get the British out of the land of Israel to create a Jewish state. And Ben Heck raised millions of dollars. And this is the 1940s, millions of dollars. So millions of dollars then is a lot more than what we have now. He raised millions of dollars for Etzel. And because of that, they were able to conduct a campaign to blow the British out of the land of Israel and create a Jewish state. That's why we came back to Israel after 2,000 years. Ben Hecht enabled us to do this by raising the money that was necessary to make the Jewish underground revolt against the British successful and make it possible. We need another Ben Hecht, and we're searching for another Ben Hecht. But in the meantime, we need all of you to help. Every donation, every contribution makes a difference. People ask how they can donate and how they can contribute, and there are two ways they can do so to help the Hilltop Youth. The first way is to go to our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. And on top of hayamin.org, there's a donate button in English, a big donate button. You click on the donate button, and in several minutes, you can very easily and conveniently donate. And you can also, by the way, make monthly donations. You can have what you recurring donations you can set there, or you can make a one-time donation, whatever you prefer. That's online. If you want to do it through the regular mail, you can send checks and money orders to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. You just make the check out to JTF and send it to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Now let's get to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start off this week with Ram Sheva Sheva Ephes, who asked a question in Hebrew, and it's very long, so we're going to shorten it, and we're going to answer as much as we can. I'm going to read it in Hebrew, and then we're going to translate it. It won't take long. Shalom Chaim Hayakar, Mashlomcha. Shamati et hadvarim shelcha legabei noar hagevaot. Ani maskim itcha million achuz. Yesh lechaver sheli ben Zion Gagula Amuta. אפשר דרך זה לעשות גיוס המונים למען נוער הגבעות, שיהיה לזה תקציב ביום חמישי. בסדר. Okay, Ram is talking about what his friends in Israel have, the things that they have in Israel, which are not really, the particular thing he's proposing here is not really necessary. We already have Amutot. Amutot are the organizations, the funds, the fundraising organizations to support the Hilltop Youth. We already have that in place. But in any event, Ram is proposing how to help, and he says he agrees 100% and he wants to help. And he's speaking about some of the things that they're planning to do very soon, Zoom meetings with a member of the Knesset, and so on. Ram, אני מודה לך מאוד, ואנחנו עוד נהיה בעזרת השם בקשר, אני מקווה, לגבי מה שאנחנו נוכל לעשות למען נוער הגבעות. זה מצב חירום, רם, ואנו חייבים לתמוך בהם, כי הם התקווה שלנו למנוע הקמתה של מדינה פלסטינית שפירושה התאבדות לאומית לישראל. אז בשביל זה אנחנו חייבים לגייס את האנשים, וזה מצב דחוף. ואני מצטער שאני לא בקשר איתך באופן יומיומי, כי אני עסוק מאוד במה שאנחנו עושים למען נוער הגבעות, אבל אני מקווה שנוכל לעבוד על זה ביחד בעתיד. And I just said to Ram that I thank him very much, and that we've got to get, it's an urgent situation, and we've got to get involved in helping the Hilltop Youth, and I hope we'll be able to work together on projects to do so. And now we go to our good friend Yamach Shmor Islam, who writes, and I quote, Deir Chaim, which is the worst majority black city? Birmingham, Alabama, Memphis, Tennessee, Baltimore, Maryland, Detroit, Michigan. That's a tough choice. I think Detroit, Michigan. Baltimore, Maryland is not far behind, but I think Detroit, Michigan probably is definitely the worst. It's just a nightmare. It's a war zone there. It's a horror. A complete horrible situation. That was once a city which was very productive, producing automobiles General Motors and Ford were all located in Michigan, and you had a lot of workers and people who worked for those companies living in Detroit as well. You had decent, clean, nice, safe neighborhoods in Detroit, and all of it was destroyed. Thank you, Yimach Shemo to Islam. And now we go to our other great friend, Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, I found out from Wikipedia what man killer means, the surname man killer, Asgaya Dihi, in the Cherokee language, refers to a traditional Cherokee military rank similar to captain or major or a shaman with the ability to avenge wrongs through spiritual means. Okay, can you discuss Wilma Mankiller other than her name? She seems to be some type of San Francisco liberal activist that JTF would oppose, specifically related to a Red Power group that occupied Alcatraz Island. Well, Alcatraz, I think people know that Alcatraz was a very famous or notorious U.S. penitentiary. It was a penitentiary for the worst offenders. Al Capone was there, for instance. The most dangerous and high-risk offenders were placed on this island to prevent them from escaping. And it was eventually closed, and it was eventually replaced. Now the new Supermax institution in the federal system is in Florence, Colorado. It's all underground. I don't know that much about the Wilma Mankiller. I don't know very much about her. I know that some of the American Indian groups, some of them are very left-wing, and some of them work with the communists, and some of them are also anti-Semitic and anti-Israel. Some of them compare what Israel has done in Israel, they compare this to what happened to the American Indians, which is a ridiculous comparison, because the Arabs have more than 600 times the land that the Jews have. They have 22 countries of their own, and the Muslims have over 60 countries of their own. So tiny little Israel, which is the only nation for the Jewish people, to compare what little Israel did to survive in the face of this massive Arab attempt to wipe the Jews out and destroy Israel is an obscenity. The fact is, the Jews are like the American Indians who came back 2,000 years later to reclaim their land after 2,000 years. Can you imagine after 2,000 years to come back, to be completely expelled of your land and almost completely obliterated, and then 2,000 years later to come back and reclaim the land? It's an incredible miracle. So if anything, they should be identifying with Israel, but some of them don't. Binyamin now writes, and again, this particular individual, I don't know much about her, if she was involved with the Alcatraz takeover, which was a takeover that was staged by the radical left. Obviously, that's not a good thing. Binyamin now writes, and I quote, two, discuss the following Martin Luthers, the original Martin Luther from Germany. Well, Martin Luther from Germany, of course, was a vicious Nazi Jew hater. Martin Luther from Germany referred to the Jew, first of all, he called the Jews the synagogue of Satan and incited violence and mass murder against the Jews. And by the way, the term synagogue of Satan appears in the Christian Bible. So there's a lot of anti-Semitic incitement to murder in the Christian Bible, unfortunately. And he used this name, synagogue of Satan, and called for and said that the Talmud should be burned, and that Jewish holy book should be burned. I mean, just vicious, vicious anti-Semitism. What happened was he was outraged, just like Muhammad, just like other people. When the Jews refuse to convert, refuse to accept their religions, they're outraged and they want to murder all the Jews. So this is what happened with Martin Luther. He was outraged at the Jews for daring not to abandon their religion and give up their religion. A vicious, vicious Jew killer and Jew hater. And I say Jew killer because he incited people to murder Jews. And Binyamin asks about Martin Luther King Sr., Martin Luther King Jr., and Martin Luther King III. Okay, that's father, son, and grandson. It's interesting that the original name for Martin Luther King was Martin King. That was his original name. I'm talking about Martin Luther King Sr. His original name was Martin King, but he changed it to Martin Luther King. He was an admirer of Martin Luther, the Nazi Jew hater. And this is who the Jews, by the way, gave so much money and so much support to and did so much on behalf of. If the Jews had done for the Jews during the Holocaust 1% of what they did on behalf of the so-called civil rights movement with Martin Luther King, if they had given just 1% of that support to the Jews during the Holocaust, we might not have had a Holocaust. And certainly if they had given much more than that, if they had given 10 or 20% of what they, if they had done 20 or 20% on behalf of the Jews during the Holocaust, then there definitely wouldn't have been a Holocaust. But anyway, that didn't bother the Jews, that he takes the name of a vicious Jew hater, Martin Luther. And Martin Luther King Sr., again, Martin Luther King Sr. is the father of the Martin Luther King Jr. that we have the holiday for. Martin Luther King Sr. Was a longtime friend and supporter of all types of anti-Semites, black anti-Semites, supported the black militant black agenda, was a strong supporter of Jimmy Carter, gave speeches at the Democrat convention where Jimmy Carter was nominated, and I remember he was a big supporter of Jimmy Carter, big defender of Jimmy Carter, the anti-Semite. So, in other words, just bad news for the Jewish people. And without the Jews, he would have been nothing. And Martin Luther King Jr., his son, Benjamin asked about Martin Luther King Jr., his son, you know, he plagiarized, he's called the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. He got a doctorate. And his thesis that he wrote his so-called doctorate for was plagiarized. He plagiarized on his tests in college, he plagiarized on his thesis, he plagiarized in his speeches. This person who we have a national holiday for was just a con man and a plagiarizer and a crook and someone who associated with every black anti-Semite under the sun. He associated with Elijah Muhammad. Who's Elijah Muhammad? Elijah Muhammad was the head of the Nation of Islam. A group that said that all whites are devils and the whole white race is going to be exterminated. That was a friend of Martin Luther King Jr. Malcolm X was someone who Martin Luther King Jr. met with and associated with. And he went to conferences in 1967. There was a black conference of black organizations and black leaders where they voted to condemn the Jews and condemn Israel and condemn Zionism. Martin Luther King attended the conference. He didn't speak up against this, even though most of his funds came from self-hating Jews. Most of his, almost all of his public relations work was done by self-hating Jews who volunteered to do public relations work for him and defend him and fight for him, and Jewish journalists and Jewish contributors and Jewish donors and you name it, and so-called rabbis went to the South and got arrested, things they never did for the 6 million Jews during the Holocaust, things they never did for Soviet Jewry. In the 1960s, they could have done this for Soviet Jewry. They never did any of this for Soviet Jewry. But for Martin Luther King and for the black anti-Semites, they went down South and got arrested on behalf of the black anti-Semites. Oh, what a sick story. By the way, Martin Luther King Jr., in addition to being anti-Semitic and being a phony and a fraud and an opportunist, he defended communist North Vietnam. He defended their land-grabbing program of grabbing land and murdering landowners, which was condemned by Western countries. Martin Luther King defended them. Martin Luther King also said that the United States is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. That's a quote. He made a famous speech where he said, when he was attacking the U.S. policy in Vietnam, he said, the United States is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. In other words, the United States is the bad guy, not Muslim terrorist countries, not the communist world. 1960s, the communist world was openly conquering countries and openly vowing to conquer the world. No, they're not the bad guys. The bad guys, the United States is the bad guy, is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. That was Martin Luther King Jr., whom we have a national holiday today for. Not a single American president, not a single white person gets a national holiday, but Martin Luther King Jr., the anti-American, anti-white, anti-Semitic, phony, fake, fraud, plagiarizer, he gets a national holiday. And then we have Martin Luther King III is the... As our great Yosef Ben Meir, who used to be my co-host on the program, Alav HaShalom, peace should be upon him, he should rest in peace. Yosef Ben Meir used to say, when we'd say Martin Luther King III, Yosef used to say, I hope he's the last. Anyway, he's the oldest son of Martin Luther King, and of course friends with Barack Hussein Osama, who in turn is friends with Louis Farrakhan, friends with all the black Jew haters, spoke at the Jew-hating pedophile Michael Jackson's memorial service, has made speeches and organized with people on behalf of open borders. He wants America to have completely open borders. In other words, basically, the scum of the earth. I don't know how else to put it. The scum of the earth. Thank you, Benjamin. And now we go to our good friend, Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Are there any Israeli prime ministers you actually liked?" Unquote. No. No. None. I don't like phonies and frauds, and the Israeli establishment would never allow anyone who was good to become prime minister. Rabbi Meir Kahana would have been a great prime minister, but they'd never allow Rabbi Meir Kahana to become prime minister. The Israeli establishment, the Israeli media, the Israeli multinational corporations, and Israeli billionaires who control and own most of the stocks in the Israeli stock market and really run the Israeli economy, these billionaire families, they do not allow people who dissent in a real way from their policies to become prime minister or to even run in elections. There are no real free elections in Israel. They banned Rabbi Meir Kahana from running because he was on the verge of gaining tremendous support and becoming a very big political party and political movement, and the polls showed that, the polls reflected that, and they banned him while allowing Arab terrorist Nazis who promised to exterminate the Jews and who support every terrorist mass murdering organization, they're allowed to sit in the Knesset. Rabbi Meir Kahana was not allowed to run and was murdered in the end because of that. And Chaim Ben Pesach is not allowed to make Aliyah. Thank you, Chicago Jew. Do I like any Israeli prime ministers? No way. No way. And now a very, very good JTFer, Naches, is here. Naches is one of our really great people, and he writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. One, please discuss the Bible Torah code, and what do you think about the book or books written called the Bible Code, if you're familiar with them, and the sequels to this book, unquote. I'm not familiar with the books themselves, but if they're discussing and showing people the tremendous codes that are in, because in the Bible there are tremendous codes, what Naches is referring to, in the Bible, in the original Hebrew, there are all types of codes. There are parts of the Bible where every seven letters, the seventh letter of every word in sentences, spell out new words and new sentences. Or where every 18th word spells out a name or spells out something. It's just incredible. There are codes in the Bible, in the original Hebrew we're talking about, there are codes in the Bible that are absolutely incredible, and in the Torah that are absolutely incredible. And if these books show people that and demonstrate that, then it would be a positive thing. Naches now writes, and I quote, two, because you do the inflection to perfection and the vernacular is spectacular, could you please do your legendary version of the Indian accent? Thanks and God bless you. I don't know if I could do the Indian accent. I haven't done the long. I don't really come into much contact with people ever since I left Punjab province. You know, I was from Punjab province. Now I drive cab in Queens. But I'm not in contact with the, I have nothing to do. I have no contact with the, I haven't had any curry for a half hour already. A long time I haven't eaten any curry. But I was in Delhi last year. Now I'm in Queens. Now I drive cab in Queens. And I know that wasn't very good because I haven't done it in a long time. But anyway, Naches, you put me on the spot with that one, and I'm just not very good at that anymore. Anyway, thank you, though, Naches. Thank you. The great Nekama was going to write, but Nekama, I know, is very busy and was unable to write this week, but we hope to see him in future weeks. And we've got a new person from Israel named J.T. Eferis, who writes, and I quote, Shalom, okay, this time I'll be exercising my English with you all. Chaim, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. So if Israel's an apartheid state, racist, fascist, oppressive, and xenophobic, as the loony left claim we are, Why do they want us to open our borders to even more Arabs, Africans, and basically everyone? Does it make any sense to you? Let all into such a horrible place? What for? To make them miserable? I mean, aren't we evil oppressors, the worst of the worst? And hey, don't they say that the Jewish majority is in danger? That's why we must embrace the two-state solution if it's in danger. And they're so worried about it. Why do they want more non-Jews in here? Thank you. You know, you make some very good points. You know, of course, they say that Israel is such a terrible place, and yet so many third world people, including so many Arabs who want to destroy Israel, but they want to come into Israel. They want to be part of Israel. Of course they do, because in the Arab world, their lives are a hell, a living hell. Even in wealthy Arab countries like Saudi Arabia, there's still oppressive, horrible regimes and oppressive, horrible life there, even though they're rolling in money. So, yeah, that's a very good point. Why would they want to come to Israel if things are so terrible and there's so much oppression there? Very good point. And the second point that is being made here is that people on the left always say we have to have a so-called Palestinian state in order to preserve the Jewish majority in Israel, because there are a lot of Arabs that live in Judea and Samaria, and we can't have them because we let them be part of the Jewish state. That'll endanger Israel's Jewish majority. So they say, you know, let's give away Israel's biblical heartland in order to preserve a Jewish majority. That's the excuse they use. But these same people are more than happy to erode Israel's Jewish majority by allowing in hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens. That they're allowed to do. So you make very, very good points. I do want to say that I do think that having the Arabs in Judea and Samaria as part of Israel would endanger Israel's Jewish majority. We should keep Judea and Samaria and keep the whole land of Israel and get rid of Israel's Arab enemies. Get them out of Israel. That's the real solution. Thank you, JTFeris. Ani modelach ve'anglit shelach hashavua hayta metsuyenet. And now we go to someone who asks excellent questions all the time. Hirvatsky Noachide, who writes, and I quote, one, can you list the six sexual acts that are forbidden to Gentiles as capital sins? And two, can you show the sources of the prohibitions in the written Torah? Oh, wow. The six sexual acts that are forbidden to Gentiles as capital sins. In other words, you get the death penalty for it. And where would that be in the Torah? Well, the source for it has to be in Sefer Bereshit. And I'd have to find it. So let me go. I'm on the internet. Let me go and try to find it in the original Hebrew, which is what I'm more comfortable with when it comes to reading the Torah. And let's see. It would be in Bereshit. And I know that it was after the story of Adam Harishon, the Chava, Adam and Eve. Let's see. It would be, this is chapter 1. No, chapter 2. Was it Kaf Gimel? No, it was Kaf Dalet. Here we go. I found it. Okay, I didn't know if I would find it, by the way. You know, I'm not always sure I can find it. But anyway, I found it. It's Bereshit Perek Bet, which means chapter 2 in Genesis. Kaf Dalet. Pasuk Kaf Dalet, which means Pasuk is verse 24. And it says, and I quote, Al ken yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo ve'davek be'ishto ve'hayu levasar echad, unquote, which means accordingly or therefore a man will leave his father and his mother and will cling to his wife and they will become one flesh. That's the English translation. Now, that's the source. That's the halachic source for the forbidden sins that are capital offenses for the Gentiles. And how do we get that out of that? Let's see. Can we figure that out from that? Well, we know it says, first of all, it says that a person will leave his father and his mother. So that means his mother, he's forbidden to have sex with his mother, God forbid. As disgusting as it sounds, I mean, unfortunately, things like that exist in our sick world. But he's forbidden to have an incestuous relationship with his mother, God forbid. And it says, and his mother, that means that his maternal, not only, that means that, he's forbidden to have sex with his mother. That's one out of the six. I'm sorry, I'm just figuring this out as we go along. I'm sorry for the confusion. He's also forbidden to have the wife of someone else because he's supposed to cling to his wife. So that's adultery. That's a second one. His father's wife would be a third one, right? Because his father's wife, so he can't have sex with his father's wife if his father's married to another woman. In other words, for all types of reasons, men can be married to other women sometimes. Sometimes because you had more than, first of all, you had polygamy in biblical times. But even if it, even if you don't have that, you have a situation where the wife can pass away, or they could be divorced or whatever, and he could have another wife. You're not allowed to have sex with your father's wife. You're not allowed to have sex with your mother. That's two. You're not allowed to have sex with someone else's wife. Committing adultery is not permitted. That's three. You're not allowed to have sex with a man. It says to have sex with his wife. Okay, so you're not allowed to have sex with another man. That's homosexuality, forbidden. Not allowed to have sex with an animal because it says they'll become one flesh. Human flesh, animal flesh, two different things. It's a different, especially in halakha and Torah terms. They're completely different. So it can't be. So we ruled out. You asked for six sexual acts that are forbidden to the Gentile, six capital sins. So this one verse takes out sex with the mother, sex with his father's wife, sex with another wife, with wife of someone else. In other words, adultery, homosexual sex, and animal. That's five. That's five in this one verse. Now, I don't know where the other verse is. There is, but I know what the story is. The maternal, you're not allowed to have sex with your maternal sister. And we know this from the story of Avraham and Avimelech. Avraham told Avimelech, again, in Sefer Bereshit, in the book of Genesis. Avraham tells Avimelech that Sarah is his sister from his father, but not from his mother, and therefore she's his wife. In other words, the sister from the father is one thing, but the sister on his mother's side is forbidden. So we know that you're not allowed to marry your maternal sister. And that is also... that's also gilui arayot. That's also a form of incest. That's absolutely forbidden. So that's six, as far as I can count. I think that's six. Did we get six? Oh, there's another one, by the way. That I think there are seven. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think there are seven, because the father and daughter are not allowed to have sex. How do we know this? We know this from the story of Lot. When Lot left Stom the Amora, Sodom and Gomorrah. When Lot left, his two daughters had sex with him so that they could have built two nations. He impregnated his two daughters. He was drunk and he impregnated his two daughters. And the shame that the Bible is and the Torah is so clear that there was such shame from that story that it's clear that that's also forbidden. So father daughter is forbidden. So I think there are seven capital sins that are not permitted. Now, I hope I haven't bored people with all these details back and forth, but I just wanted to, you know, Hirvatsky asked great questions, and I wanted to, am I wrong? Is it six instead of seven? I don't know. I'm counting seven. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. Okay, anyway, let's go on here, but Hirvatsky, great question. And again, I don't remember the verse. I know it's the story. It would take me too long to find, but this is the story of Avraham and Avimelech as far as the father-daughter prohibition. That would be the story of when after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Thank you, Hirvatsky. And now we go to Zera Yisrael Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Alechem Chaim. What would you say What would you say would be the easiest way to fix intermarriage outside of Israel? I don't think you can fix it outside of Israel. I think if you're going to have a situation where the Jews are a small minority living in a massive non-Jewish majority culture, that there's going to be intermarriage. The reason that the Jews, in many cases, were able to avoid intermarriage before them was because they lived in ghettos. They were forced to be segregated from the non-Jewish world. They were pushed into ghettos in Christian Europe and in the Muslim world. But the minute they were allowed out of those ghettos and were allowed to mingle and mingle, you know, obviously that's going to lead to intermarriage. It's going to. That's what's going to happen. And so there is no solution. The only solution is Aliyah. Jews belong in Israel. The Jews who live outside of Israel, the vast majority of them will disappear. If they do not go back to Israel, they're going to disappear. They're not going to be Jewish for long. Eventually, either they will assimilate, or their children will assimilate. Thank you, Zera Yisrael Kahanist. And now we go to... And by the way, I'm in favor of Jewish education, of course, in the Galut, and I'm in favor of the Galut being the exile. I'm in favor of Jewish education and attempts to educate Jews and so on and try to minimize the damage as much as possible. But in the end, you're fighting a losing battle. The Jews are 1% of the population in a country. They're going to mingle with the other 99%. You're not going to be able to keep your children away from the other 99%. That's going to happen in most cases. And now we go to the great Kahana Was Right BT, who always has great questions and is a great JTFer, and writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, in the last video I was referring to the Haredi Rabbi Gershon Edelstein of the Degel HaTorah faction. Or I understand that there's also a non-Haredi Rabbi Tau making crazy statements as well. I'm wondering about this Rabbi Tau. Is he pro-Kahanist? I read on Wikipedia that he opposed soldiers refusing orders to expel Jews. Sounds like part of the establishment. How many rabbis are truly on the side of the Hilltop Youth and real Kahanists? Rabbi Tau is obviously not pro-Kahanist. Terrible person who's against Jews praying in the Temple Mount and against Jews. It's just a complete. He's what we call a mizruchnik, or he's mamlachti. Mamlachti means he's loyal to the kingdom. He's loyal to whoever's the king, and he's a mizruchnik. He's part of the Mizrahi movement, which is a terrible movement of religious Jews, who are fanatically who worship the state and worship the government in Israel. They worship the Israeli army. They worship the government. That's why this guy said that Jews should obey orders to throw other Jews out of their homes. I mean, just sick people. And this guy is the ultimate mizruchnik. Terrible person. And so, of course, he's going to issue stupid, sick statements defending this serial pedophile. What can I tell you? He's not part of the establishment. The establishment actually doesn't like him. They actually hate him. And yet he worships the establishment, even though they hate him. He worships them. Thank you, Kahana Was Right. It's a sick world out there, Kahana Was Right. What can I tell you? And now we go to our very good friend, Italian Zionist, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, when you read the Bible, there are all these wonderful leaders that protected Israel like Moses and David. At what point did these leaders end and why? I would say that the Maccabees was the last time, except for modern Israel, Six-Day War, etc., when Israel was successful against their enemies. What is your opinion why the Romans were so successful against Israel for such a long time? From what I recall, I believe you said it was a punishment from God. But a punishment for what specifically? And why would God allow the Romans to control Israel for almost 1,000 years if you include the Byzantine or Eastern Romans? Unquote. Okay, great questions, as always, from Italian Zionists. We have not had good Jewish leaders, except in modern times, except for Rabbi Kahana. We had the Vilna Gaon 250 years ago, something like that. He was a great spiritual leader, and of course Rabbi Kahana, and you have some rabbis that sometimes tell us the truth, but our leaders are horrific, and despite that, God has brought us back to the land of Israel, because the order in which the redemption is coming is first the Jews are brought back to Israel. Then God will gradually teach them lessons in Israel and prepare them, and they will eventually come back and wake up and change their ways. That will happen. There'll be a great awakening, and they will change their ways. We had great leaders like Moses and David and Abraham, Isaac and Jacob and Samuel the prophet and other great leaders in biblical times because we had prophecy in those days. We have not had prophecy since the destruction of the first temple. That was the end of prophecy. That was part of the punishment. The Jews were punished because they committed certain sins. They committed the sin of spilling blood, spilling each other's blood and spilling innocent blood. They committed the sin of idol worship, and they committed the sin they committed sexual sins. And just in general, they were not willing to follow the laws of God. And then in the end, that was in the first temple. In the second temple, the sin that they committed was sinat chinam, which means they had needless hatred for their fellow Jews. And that led to the destruction of the second temple. God demands of the Jews that they repent and return and do what he commands them to do. And it's an eternal covenant. In the end, though, he's going to save the Jews one way or the other, because he promised the great Jews like Moses and David and Rabbi Kahana and the other great Jews who gave their lives for the cause and who were wonderful for their sake and for his great name's sake, he is going to save the Jews and save the righteous Gentiles for that reason. But until then, there'll be punishments if the Jews... It's going to be a rough road until we reach the final redemption if the Jews don't do what they're supposed to do. You ask about the Romans. The Romans were successful because God uses nations. What happens is God uses nations that are evil and that are murderous, and the Romans were very murderous, sadistic, evil empire. They murdered millions of people, committed atrocious crimes and holocausts against people, wiped out huge numbers of people. They murdered over 1 million Jews. And you know, the crucifix which the Christians use, I'm not going to get into the specifics of that, except to say that thousands of Jews were crucified. This was an example of the sadism and the cruelty of the Roman Empire. God will use them as a tool to punish his people, in order to bring his people back and in order to eventually redeem his people. That is something God does over and over again. He did it with Egypt and Pharaoh, and he took Pharaoh's free will away. When people are evil and pass a certain point, God actually takes their free will away as part of the punishment. That's what Harambam Maimonides teaches us. And that's what we had when Pharaoh, it says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. In other words, Pharaoh lost his free will after the first five plagues. The last five plagues, where he should have said, "Wow, I'm not gonna mess with this God. This is too much for me." His free will was taken away because God wanted to punish him for all the evil that he did. So God will use evil people and evil nations to carry out his will and as tools to carry out his will. But those evil nations who are doing it for the wrong reason, and they're going to be punished for their wickedness, because they want to do it. They would want to kill the Jews. The Romans would have wanted to kill the Jews, even if every Jew was righteous and doing everything God wanted to do. They would love to sadistically murder the Jews, and they did sadistically murder good Jews like Rabbi Akiva. So, you know, what God does is he allows the evil to succeed in order to punish people who are violating and not following his laws. God does not tolerate idolatry, does not tolerate sexual immorality, does not tolerate the shedding of blood of other people, innocent blood of other people. There are certain things God will not tolerate, and does not tolerate needless hatred that Jews have for their fellow Jews. So those things are punished and were punished historically. Thank you very much, Italian Zionist. And now we go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, "Shalom Chaim, do you have any good affirmative action stories? I could use a good laugh. Thanks." There are always, I come into contact with people all the time. You live in New York City, everyone, I'm sure, has affirmative action stories. I mean, I was, you know, I was, where was I? What is the name of that neighborhood? I forgot the name of the neighborhood. It's a neighborhood in Queens. But I was in this neighborhood in Queens. And I'm walking down the street, and all of a sudden this guy, the black guy, starts screaming on the top of his lungs. Starts screaming. Because a lot of blacks are nuts. You know, we talk about Martin Luther King. One of the questions of Benjamin asked about Martin Luther King. Did you know that Martin Luther King Sr.'s wife and his mother were murdered in the church during a church service? That some crazy black guy murdered Martin Luther King Sr.'s wife and his mother? His mother and his wife were just slaughtered by this crazy black guy. And he was stabbed in another incident. And they're just, I mean, just constant insanity. I mean, a lot of them are insane. But anyway, this one black guy starts screaming, "You thought it was all over. You thought it was over when that Trump became president. You thought it was over. I know you thought it was over. I know you thought, y'all thought that you were done with us. You thought you were finished and done, be done and finished with us when Trump became president. You didn't know, y'all didn't know that black people gonna come back. And black is back. Black is back. You thought it was all over? You gonna see what gonna be happening now. Because black is back." So, anyway, this is what people have to be treated to, and my kippah fell off of my head while I was explaining to you what happened here. And you know, these are the type of wonderful lectures, the educational lectures that we get now on street corners and in subways again. And this is what New York City is becoming. Everywhere you go, you see things like this. That's nothing. That's just someone screaming and yelling. It's nothing compared to the terrible things that are happening where people are murdered and raped and horrible things happen. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to Ramat Gan Brit, who writes, and I quote, "I am sad to hear that you are not allowed to do Aliyah, Chaim. Who specifically in the Knesset is blocking this, and what specifically has to be done to enable you to come to Israel?" Unquote. Thank you for asking. And no one in the Knesset is blocking me. This is being blocked by the successive governments in Israel have prevented me from coming. This has been going on since 1996. I first requested the right to make Aliyah in 1996, and it's been almost 26 years now. And this is something that Sar HaPnim is in charge of. Sar HaPnim is the interior minister. And I've written to Sarei Pnim, and I've interior ministers, and I've written to Rashi Memshala, to prime ministers, and they've refused to do anything about it. So it's being blocked by the Israeli authorities, just like Rabbi Kahana was banned unjustly. I'm being banned from setting foot in Israel just because of the views I express, only because of my views, just because of what I stand for. And meanwhile, you have millions of Arabs in Israel who hate the Jewish state and want to destroy Israel. You have hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens. Many of them are black Muslims from Africa who are destroying Jewish neighborhoods, who have destroyed all of South Tel Aviv. They're all allowed to stay there. Everything is fine. They're there illegally, but nobody touches them. Nobody gets rid of them, even though they're there illegally. But Chaim ben Pesach is not allowed to make Aliyah. Thank you, Ramat Gan Brit. And now we go to Joe Brandon, who's been asking questions for several weeks. And we're going to see this week what interesting questions Joe has. And he writes, and I quote there, Chaim. One, what would you call the Flintstones if they were black? Do you remember the answer? Unquote. Joe, I do not remember the answer. You got me there. Joe, I'm 65 years old. If you're asking me for memory stuff, I mean, I'm 65 years old already. So, seriously, I don't remember the answer. And Joe writes, too, do you believe this Flintstones parable should be taught in schools? Critical affirmative action theory, unquote. Well, Joe, you know, I certainly understand and agree with your view that the educational system is an obscenity and that we should be teaching something completely different, the complete opposite of what we're teaching to children in schools. The educational system in the United States, in all seriousness, has become a tool for brainwashing the next generation, and it's working. And I don't know if there's any solution. I doubt that there is, because I think some of this is just far gone. I think that parents should not be sending their children, certainly not to public schools. Public schools are used simply to brainwash children and teach them things that go against every single moral value and ethic and anything decent or anything that the United States of America used to stand for. So I think it's a very bad situation. I don't think that parents should send their children to public schools. And even private schools, many of them, most of them, are also problematic. So we have a very serious problem. And yes, on racial issues, the school system brainwashes people and teaches them that white people are terrible and glorifies all the evil people, all the haters and racists and bigots are called civil rights leaders and glorified. And it's really tragic. Really tragic. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Noah Hyde, who writes, and I quote, "What is your comment on the tragic fire in the Bronx?" Unquote. Of course, it's a terrible tragedy. You know, we have a brutal cold that sometimes comes in New York City. New York City can be very, very cold. Today was bitter cold today. It was in the teens today, Fahrenheit, which means it was in the minus numbers for Celsius. And I mean, it was freezing here. I mean, I'm indoors and I'm wearing a sweater. I'm wearing a shirt, a flannel shirt and a sweater, and you know, it's cold. And I'm wearing tzitzit. So, it's cold. And so somebody apparently had a space heater. And the space heater caught on fire, because they can be dangerous. If you don't watch them, they can be dangerous. And the space heater caught on fire, and we had the tragic, massive death in the Bronx. And of course, it's a tragedy. We've got to be careful. There are tragedies like this, unfortunately, do occur. Thank you, Noah Hyde. And now we go to our great friend Gimatria, whom we know for many years. Gimatria writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim HaTzadik. Why, in your opinion, were there so many cases of food poisoning at Jerusalem 2? Unquote. Well, Jerusalem 2, what Gimatria is referring to is a so-called restaurant called Jerusalem 2, where the conditions there were filthy. And it was horrible. First of all, we didn't know that it was a dirty, nasty place. It was an Israeli restaurant, supposed to be kosher. And so we wanted to have a meeting against Arafat during the Oslo agreements, against Arafat. And when the Israelis who owned the place found out that this was going to be against Arafat, he says, Mani the Arafat, what do I have against Arafat? Kol ha-poalim sheli aravim. All of my workers are Arabs. Ani lo rotze bayotim ha-poalim sheli. I don't want problems with my workers. So he canceled our meeting, and the $50 we paid him to rent space there, so we could have a meeting, we were going to have the $50, and we were going to buy food. But the $50 we gave, he refused to return to us, and he canceled the meeting. This filthy crook. And Jerusalem 2, and then I went there to complain about it, and I noticed that the place is filthy. Literally mice, and by the way, they've gotten many, many bad reports from the health department in New York City. Terrible reports from the health department. It's amazing they don't close them down. Rats, and I mean, not rats, but mice, and cockroaches, and all types of insects found in the food, in the kitchen, and rodent droppings in the food. I mean, just disgusting, disgusting. So, you know, it's a terrible place, and we've been warning. We started warning about it, and you know, unfortunately, some people are not aware of it, and still might actually have gone and eaten there, and that would be very unfortunate. Gematria now writes, what are your thoughts on Mormonism? Certainly some of the doctrinal beliefs, God living on a planet called Kalub, Jews sailed to America in 600 BCE, are strange. But in my experience, these people are conservative and teach family values, modesty, virtue. They abstain from malfeasant behavior and they love their children, unquote. Maybe so, but their religion is crazy. And, you know, again, they're very aggressive missionaries. So, and there are, you know, unfortunately, there are Jews, some Jews who converted to Mormonism. What was the name of that guy? He's on Fox News. He was a congressman from Utah, and he has a Jewish name. I think his father was Jewish. And he's always there. I forgot what his name was. Oh, I couldn't stand him. He became a devout Mormon. He lived in Brooklyn originally, and then a Jew from Brooklyn, or his father was Jewish from Brooklyn, and he became a Mormon and converted to Mormonism and moved to Utah. Chafetz, I think his name was Chafetz, but in English I don't remember what his name was, but terrible. But anyway, they're aggressive missionaries. Missionaries, we can't have missionary activity. That we can't have, because we will not sacrifice a single Jewish soul. So, what else can I say? Gematria now asks, and I quote, a final question. For the past 7 years, I have been davening at a Chabad shul, and I have grown to feel very close to Chabad, and through watching videos and reading about him, the Rebbe Zatzal, what was the relationship between Rabbi Kahana, Hashem Yikom Damo, and the Rebbe? In general, what has been your experience in interacting with Chabadnikim, Toda, Gematria? Well, the Chabadnikim are against surrendering of Jewish land. We have some we have difference of opinion on some issues with them, but at least they agree with us on surrendering Jewish land, and so there are areas in which we can work together. And I would love to get Chabadnikim to help us with the Hilltop Youth. I would love to see that happen, because the Rebbe was against giving up any land, any Jewish land, even 1 inch of Jewish land, under any circumstances. So I would hope that we'd get their support. Thank you so much, Gematria. And now we go to Harel 156, another longtime friend of ours, who writes, and I quote, excuse me, where does all the money go? In New York, we have federal tax, state tax, city tax. Have you driven the roads of New York City, I-95, roads in disrepair for years, decades, on the Kew Garden interchange, DOT works 40 years, and they are not finished. Most of the time, workers do nothing. Speed cameras all over the city to rob any and all drivers. Where does all the money go? To the Cushies and Cushiites, teachers' unions, corrupt politicians, salaries and benefits. Is New York City, like the entire USA, corrupt? How? Can you give examples? How did we get here? Any remedy you suggest? Unquote. There is no remedy. I think New York City is a lost cause. I think New York City is finished. I don't think there's a remedy. I don't. And I lived in New York City my whole life. 65 years I lived in New York City. And I remember when I was a child, it was a different city. It was a different place. Even when I was a teenager, it was a different place. It was going downhill. It was already deteriorating. Even when I was a teenager, even 50 years ago, it was deteriorating. But now it's really in terrible shape. I mean, the city is just, it can't get any worse than this. It's just, it's really, really horrible. Actually, it can get worse, unfortunately, and I think it will. But the city is dirty. It's the highest taxed place in the country. It's very high crime. There's very high crime here. We have a Farrakhan-supporting black mayor who just installed a black police commissioner who's a complete moron and who I think is more supportive of the criminals than their victims. It's a lot of bad news here. And even the weather in the city and the cold and just everything. And just I don't know what Jews see in New York City when they can have Eretz Yisrael, the beautiful land of Israel. What did they see in this city? I just don't understand it. I'm not allowed to go. I would love to live in Eretz Yisrael now, because this city is just, and you have a lot of problems in Israel too, but at least that's our homeland. At least there's hope, and I know that in Eretz Yisrael, because we're promised in the Torah and in the Bible that that things are going to change and we're going to be redeemed there. At least there we're promised that something good is coming. In New York City, I don't see anything good coming. I think everything you're saying, Harel, is all true. And I think it's not just New York City. Where do you go from New York City? You move to Florida or Texas? A lot of New Yorkers are going to Florida or Texas. You know how hot it is in Florida and Texas? 6 months out of the year, it's like Jehennum in Florida and Texas. I mean, it's like hell. Gehennom in Hebrew. I said Jehennum because, I'm saying what my grandfather, Zichrono Livracha, used to say. Jehennum is actually Arabic. But for hell. My grandfather, of course, was from Egypt. But New York City, I mean, Florida and Texas, which are not yet at the state of New York City, not yet as bad as New York City in terms of taxes and other things, but it is so hot down there and so uncomfortable, and it's getting, and Florida and Texas are becoming like New York City. It's becoming the same story. It's going to be the same story. Or the one place where you have nice weather is California. There you have beautiful weather. You have beautiful weather in California. But the state is a nightmare. You have rows and rows and miles of homeless people living there. Smelly, nasty, mentally unbalanced, homeless people for miles and miles and miles all over Los Angeles and San Francisco. I mean, it is a nightmare. It's just a nightmare. You have laws in San Francisco where you're, and other cities now where you're allowed to rob. You're allowed to go in the store and rob, and they're not, they can't arrest you if you robbed under several hundred dollars. You rob a few hundred dollars worth of items, you can't be arrested now. They let you go in and rob in the big stores. I don't know. I don't understand it. I think we're in pretty bad shape, personally. To be honest with you, I think we're in pretty bad shape. Thank you, Harael, and I want to thank everybody for another program. The good news is that Hashem promises us that someday there's going to be redemption and someday the good guys are going to win. But that's going to come through Israel. That's going to come through the awakening of the Jewish people in Israel. And those, and the good Jews in Israel right now in our generation are the Hilltop Youth. Get involved with us. I urge everybody here, get involved with us. Help us. Join with us. Promote JTF everywhere. Go online or mail us support on the post office box. Let's help the Hilltop Youth, and let's work to save Israel, and let's work to make this a better world. Because if we work together as a team, we can make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.